This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Arthur Margon. He is a partner at Rosen Consulting Group and co-author with the Asia Society of a new report, Breaking Ground, Chinese Investment in U.S. Real Estate. Arthur, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. You're coming to us from New York City, is that correct?
That's right.
We've always noticed this huge interest from foreign nationals, certainly Chinese, but everywhere around the world, very interested in purchasing U.S. real estate. The U.S. for many, many years has been referred to as the Brinks truck, the kind of the safe place to put your money. A lot of wealthy people in foreign countries like to stash some money and assets over here in the U.S. Tell us about what's happening right now with Chinese investors buying up properties in the U.S.
The Chinese investors have been encouraged over the past 5 or 6 years by administrative regulation in China to make investments outside of China. Individuals have had limits on how much money they could take out and convert, but they've been able to group themselves together as families, groups of friends, etc., and aggregate enough capital outside of China within the regulations or going around them, so that they were able to make enormous numbers of purchases of real estate outside the United States. Chinese investors that we know of, because some of the purchases are made through companies where you don't exactly know who the owner of the company is, but most of them are just straightforward purchases by individuals. On the residential side, Chinese investors have bought approximately $100 billion, that's with a B, $100 billion worth of residential real estate in the United States over the past 12 or 14 years. The pace has been accelerating, and the Chinese purchases have been targeted to about a half a dozen different states in the United States. They've been buying homes in on the West Coast in California and in Washington State, also obviously in Canada, in Vancouver. You can read about that. There's an enormous investment there, as well in Houston and Dallas and Texas, in the New York metropolitan area, in Boston and Chicago, the largest cities and gateway places in the United States. The flow may slow a little bit because of the economic turmoil in China. The government has begun to enforce more strictly some of the controls on individuals taking capital outside of China. So on the one hand, there's a push for a number of people to try to take capital out and invest it abroad because of the instability. On the other hand, the Chinese government, they're not stopping it, but they're making it more difficult by making people go through more administrative hoops.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you actually right off the bat when you started, isn't this something that the Chinese government would really want to discourage? I mean, the usual tenor of a government is keep the assets within the country, keep the money within the country, don't send it offshore. But just to compound onto that, overall, I mean, is the Chinese government sort of laissez-faire about this, or are they eyeing this with a great concern?
I think it's a little more complicated than the way you've laid it out.
Yeah. It always is. Don't worry.
Yeah, right. For all of us. The Chinese government has a number of different and sometimes conflicting goals, one of which is for China to be a major equal player on the international financial scene. They've just gotten accepted to the World Trade Organization. There are a number of different things like that. As part of that, over the past 5 or 6 years, the Chinese government has changed its regulations to allow Chinese insurance companies and other entities that don't buy individual homes, but buy huge commercial properties, to invest increasing percentages of their total assets outside the People's Republic of China. And they haven't changed those regulations despite the instability in the Chinese economy over the past 12 to 18 months. So on the one hand, they are concerned about capital flying out of the country when there's instability. On the other hand, they have a goal to be full participants in the international economy, and that means allowing investment abroad. Whether the investment abroad is in a company like Smithfield Hams in the United States, which another Chinese entity bought, or whether the investment is in real estate. The poster child for this was a Chinese insurance company last year buying the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. And at the same time, they have not completely cut off the ability of individual Chinese or groups of individual Chinese citizens to make smaller investments outside the United States. We expect that these forces are going to balance themselves out in a way that slows down the individual investment over the next 2 years or so, because the Chinese are going to be working hard to stabilize their internal situation. And they are going to want to slow down the movement of capital abroad. But it's an educated guess. Nobody knows for sure. But we don't see the Chinese authorities completely stopping, turning off the spigot, having capital controls, and saying, no, you can't take any of the money.
And am I understanding right that you said China wants to be a player on the international scene? They want to be viewed with respect in the world community. And it sounds like that would be a bad statement to the rest of the world, that they're trying to control capital too much, right?
Exactly. And what they're trying to do is show that they can participate in what is, for the rest of the countries in that group, is a much freer economic system. I mean, in terms of foreign direct investment, which is not the buying, again, of the homes and the apartments, but these larger business investments, Chinese investment is now equal to, on an annual basis, the offshore investments made throughout the world by companies in Japan or companies in Germany. It's about a third the size of U.S. investment by companies outside the United States. So it's still much smaller. But if you think about the way the world economy works, China being about on a par with Germany and Japan makes a lot of sense in this area because of the way the size of the economies and the types of the economies. So they're already beginning to move in that direction, and they don't want the difficulties of this economic slowdown in China to completely stop that. And it'll slow down on the business side. They'll, again, make it take longer to get approvals for companies to make large investments outside of China, but it won't stop. And we expect the same thing to happen on the individual side. The bottom line is we expect a lower level of investment from China for the next couple of years, but we still expect significant investment. And then after that, assuming that the Chinese get their internal house in order, then we expect the investment to pick up and get to be even larger than it's been recently, because all of the forces pushing for global participation, both by companies and by individuals, we think are going to get stronger.
We certainly haven't seen any shortage of Chinese investors in U.S. real estate. And it's interesting, I can't tell you the number of articles I've read, including many Wall Street Journal articles about upper middle class and wealthy Chinese people trying to move their money out of the country and trying to buy up U.S. real estate, certainly a haven from them. But yeah, I can see the opposing forces that you talk about. That makes sense. How bad is the slowdown in China? I mean, what's going on over there? There's been a lot of talk about currency wars, certainly been a lot of talk about previously, and it's reminiscent of Japan in the old days. Oh, you know, China's taken over the world. I've had Jim Rogers on the show a few times, and he's very bullish in China, but I don't know. I don't know that I really see that. I think China's got a lot of problems.
The growth and the change within China over the past 25 years is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it's just astounding. I mean, they had little towns that were 40,000 people be built up into cities of 8 and 10 million people. If you go onto the internet and look up Chinese cities greater than 5 million people, you'll find a very, very long list of cities, most of which, unless you're a student of China, you've never heard of. You don't even know that they're there, and they're, you know, the size of Los Angeles and much bigger.
Right.
It's just been phenomenal. But it has been growth that has been led by natural resource development, large industrial development, and the building of infrastructure and of housing within the People's Republic of China. Mm-hmm. And that was the case up until about 5 years ago. So when they were investing abroad, what they were investing in were things that would bring natural resources or certain kinds of knowledge into China to assist in this development. About 4 years ago, the Chinese government realized that this was not going to be a sustainable path to growth because they were developing overcapacity, too many steel mills, too many shipyards, too much high-rise housing, you name it. And so they had to begin to shift their economy from infrastructure development and capital investment to a consumer-based economy. And they've been working to do this. The transition from one to the other is a very difficult transition to make. And in the process, the growth of the overall economy has slowed down fairly dramatically. Chinese statistics aren't the most reliable, you know, economic statistics that we've got in the world, but they were growing at plus or minus 9% a year, 8 or 9% a year for a long time. Most recently, they've been growing at around 4% a year. 4% is twice the growth rate in the United States, but it's half of what they were doing in China before. And that slowdown has caused, whatever the actual numbers are, has caused a lot of dislocation within China. And the second thing that's been going on is, as part of that slowdown, you've also had a very, very active anti-corruption drive in China, which has been disruptive of existing economic relationships because of the long history of companies being closely related to the government officials.
When there's someone corrupt in China, they just shoot them in the head and, you know, it's like a, you know, the next day.
Or they go off and they disappear, or they have a quote-unquote trial. I mean, there are all kinds of, you know, things that happen.
But interestingly, there's still a lot of corruption. I mean, that's what kind of blows my mind. At least that's what I hear and read.
Yeah, I hear and read the same thing, but I also remember there are 1.25 billion people there.
Well, yeah, fair enough. So, you know, when you do it by proportions or percentages, it's probably not that much. But yeah.
Well, also, it takes a long time to get it under control because it's so vast. And because it's a regional country of regions where the individual regions have an awful lot of autonomy for a number of things, not foreign policy or stuff like that. And so getting them under control has been part of what the central government has been doing. Those two things together, the change to try to get a consumer society up and going more effectively, the anti-corruption drive, have led to a slowdown in the Chinese economy overall, which has had implications for the rest of the world. I mean, the Brazilian economy has gotten a lot weaker because China has stopped buying as much natural resources that they formerly bought from Brazil.
Right.
So it's all very interrelated and complicated. But the bottom line for us is that in the midst of this turmoil, to get back to your question that started us off on this tangent, the desire of people who have already amassed some money, and it doesn't have to be a billionaire's money. It can be, you know, upper middle class professionals or whatever, to safeguard some of that wealth or as much of that wealth as they can spare is very strong, no less strong in China than it is in the United States. One of the ways to do that is to take it outside the country to a more stable economy. And what do you invest in when you're there? One of the things to invest in is real estate. And for the individual investor, it tends to be residential real estate, not just in the United States, or I mentioned Vancouver, but in Singapore, in Australia, So it's broader than just coming into the United States.
Oh, sure, sure it is, of course, yeah.
But one of the things that makes the United States so attractive, aside from our stability and the liquidity of the real estate markets here and the rest, is the fact that many Chinese families are interested in, or already have, their children getting educations in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the purchase, we're told by real estate brokers, a lot of the purchase of homes by Chinese families is really buying a home near the university that the son or the daughter from that family is attending or will be attending.
Yep.
And with the son or the daughter then living in it. And in the meantime, before and after, maybe the family renting it out, you
sure.
know, as a business.
I'm very familiar with that concept. When I was in traditional real estate, I owned a traditional real estate company in Irvine, California, and we had
mm-hmm.
lots and lots of Chinese buyers. I was so envious that these parents would buy their kids these beautiful homes in Crystal Cove, in Newport Coast.
Right.
No one ever did that for me. And they
right.
said, oh yeah, we'll just let the kids stay there while they go to UCI, University of California at Irvine. Then we'll turn it into a rental afterwards or something. I'm like, wow, what a deal.
Yeah.
Lucky kids.
Well, one of the ways people look at this for that kind of investment, which is individuals or families, is that the residential real estate is a safe deposit box
yep.
that won't lose a lot of value over the long term and may gain in value.
Yep.
And in the meantime, can be used by family members, A, when they're at UC Irvine or the University of Chicago, you know, wherever
sure,
it may
wherever,
be.
Yeah.
Often what happens is that you'll wind up with a Chinese family deciding to come to the United States and live in the house for several months a year and then rent it out the rest of the year,
mm-hmm.
you know, when junior's out of school.
Yeah.
Some of it is just straight investment, but a lot of it is family-related, family-oriented, you know, strategy and purchases
yeah.
that's
right,
going on.
Right. Interesting. Good stuff. So what do you predict for the future of China? I mean, what do the next 10 years look like for China, for example? I'm not real optimistic about their situation over there, but maybe you differ with me. What do you think?
I think they have a very bumpy short term in front of them. The central government is trying to do a number of different things economically, which no government has ever been able to pull off simultaneously. Keep the currency strong, keep the interest rates low, a couple of other things.
Lift another couple hundred million people out of poverty.
Exactly.
Know, and fix the wounds from the one-child policy all those years. So that's quite a task.
And provide jobs for all these people.
Right.
They can provide housing because they got lots of developers. But to provide jobs is a little bit tricky.
And let's add something else to their to-do list. Maintain the communist Chinese government. Keep the people somewhat satisfied so they can do that. And that is a tall order. Chinese leaders are really in fear of unrest and change in the regime. I mean, it truly still is a communist government, okay, in the final analysis, even though it doesn't look like that or act like it in a lot of ways.
Yeah, nobody would argue that. This isn't a liberal democracy, you know, that they've got running the country over there. They are very, very focused, however, on growing the Chinese economy into a broad and diversified economy, not as an end in itself. They see that as an important step in China assuming what they believe is its rightful place in the world, which is one of the major driving superpowers in the world. And I'm not talking about military stuff here. I'm just talking about being a very strong, influential country. And some of the steps they're taking toward that, like building these islands in the South China Sea and, you know, doing other stuff like that, are a little scary because they'll bump into other powers, whether it's the United States or Japan, and you could have conflicts over some of these things. But looking at the broader thing, if the conflicts are avoided, the real conflicts, fighting kinds of conflicts are avoided, over the long term, what they're trying to do is achieve a level of influence and importance that they believe is appropriate for a country of a billion, still the largest country in terms of population in the world, although India is about to surpass them. They want to have a place in the world that is appropriate for that, and they want to develop it. Whether their system can actually do this economically is the question for the next 5 years. And I don't think anybody has the answer for that. I certainly don't. But so far, they've been very, very strategic and clever about using the tools that they have at hand, using their reserves to bolster the currency, and then stopping about 2 months ago when it looked as if the currency was evening out, doing other sorts of things, not having capital controls for either companies or individuals, but using administrative regulations and enforcement to slow down the flow of capital outside of China while they were getting this all together. I'm not totally pessimistic, I guess is what I'm saying.
All right, okay. Do people in the U.S. need to fear China, not necessarily economically, but as a military power? I mean, with these islands that they've been building, and I think they've got a couple aircraft carriers now. I've seen some renderings or pictures of them. I can't remember, you know, half the time you can never tell what's a hoax and what's real anymore
right. Nowadays.
But they looked pretty cool, those aircraft carriers.
Yeah, you wonder, are some of the things photoshopped?
Yeah,
I know.
I agree.
But I'm not a military expert, you know, at all about
but, but
this.
But I can't imagine ever having a war with China. I mean, why would anybody want to kill their best customer? Now, maybe they don't think we're their best customer in a way because we pay them in dollars that we like to inflate away the value of. But they're certainly not creating their own middle-class consumer base very quickly. Certainly, it's like you said, the past 25 years compared to where they were, it's been pretty amazing. But overall, they are not even close to being their own economy, you know, where they could have their own people buy all their products. So far away, it's absurd. So they need the U.S. Badly. They need all these consumers over here buying stuff.
I agree with that. And I agree that it would be nuts for them to get into a war with us from their perspective. It would also be nuts for us to get into a war with them from our perspective because, you know, the supply of all the stuff that we use all the time is very heavily dependent on that the other end of that supply chain, you know, being made in China. The thing that you worry about isn't somebody making a smart calculation, oh, okay, maybe we should really fight. It's that somebody doing what Obama called dumb stuff. You know, where somebody, you know, builds an island that's too big, or some pilots actually crash into some U.S. Air Force plane or a boat or something and starts some important kind of a controversy. I think the chances of that are very, very slim. I think the chances of a conflict between China and India are probably stronger. I think bigger. I think the chances of conflict between perhaps China and Japan would be stronger if Japan had a very strong army, which it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But in terms of with the United States, I think that's far-fetched. I think the concern, the national strategic concern, is not that China is going to wind up being our enemy in a war. It's that China is going to grow strategically and make it more difficult to accomplish things that we're interested in accomplishing around the world because they will be strong and different companies will be looking to them rather than to the United States for support and guidance.
Yeah. Well, hey, we've got to wrap up, but first of all, I'd like to ask you, Arthur, give out your website if you would.
Sure, rosenconsulting.com. Mm-hmm.
Do you deal with the real estate markets in the U.S. As well as looking at the Chinese issue and relationship? Yeah, I want to ask you, you know, maybe this is the $64,000 question I might have wanted to ask earlier. And of course, this is a tough one to answer, and it drives me absolutely nuts, Arthur, when people answer this stuff with a soundbite. Because the U.S. is such a large, diverse market. I mean, we've got about 400 different housing markets in the U.S., right? They break down into three types, linear, cyclical, and hybrid, the way I look at it. It's a difficult question to answer, but just generally, how are we doing in the U.S. real estate market? I think in some areas we might be approaching a bubble in the high-flying areas. Those prices in a lot of California markets are looking pretty ridiculous, and expensive Northeast markets, South Florida, they're looking pretty crazy to me, but I don't know. What do you think?
We do an economic forecast for the United States, and then we use that to forecast real estate performance in 75 markets around the country. So we look at the questions you're asking all the time. And the thing that we watch most carefully is jobs. jobs are what drive the demand for commercial real estate, offices, retail space, whatever, but they also drive the demand for housing. And the markets that seem toppy right now are markets that have seen extraordinary job growth over the past 6 or 7 years since the end of the financial crisis. And as long as job growth continues in those markets, we don't see the prices continuing to jump up because supply is starting to come on in a significant way. It's leveling off, maybe dropping a little bit, but we don't see the prices really tumbling in those markets as long as the job markets hold up locally and regionally. If there's a downturn in the job markets, then we think there could be some issues. An example of this would be for Houston, Texas, which because of the energy boom was going great guns until the oil price, the bottom fell out of the oil market.
And I issued a yellow light warning on Houston over a year ago, maybe over a year and a half ago, actually. But I don't know, I hear mixed reviews and read mixed reviews. What I heard from the last person I had a deep conversation with this is that, of course, the exploration has really declined because it just doesn't make sense to do a lot of exploration at current oil prices. But they've reallocated a lot of those jobs to the other side of the supply chain. And I don't know how smoothly companies can do that, but yeah. I know there have been some layoffs for sure.
Lot of attempt to do that. I mean, we look at the performance of multifamily companies that own multifamily projects.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
And they've seen a leveling off of rents in most of the markets nationwide and in the Houston market, and particularly in the submarkets around the energy area in Houston, as opposed to the area, let's say, near the Texas Medical Center. The Texas Medical Center area, things are doing fine. In the area around where the energy companies are located, there the vacancies are starting to creep up and the rents aren't doing as well. So we think there's been a direct impact. And our concern is whether you have other areas of the economy, I'm not talking about a market now, but other areas of the economy where you may be reaching the point where the job growth is going to stop and you may have a downturn. Mm-hmm. And that's what we'd be most careful about. The places that we think could see that over the next year or so, and again, we're not looking at a 2008 kind of scenario here, would be the heavily tech-related markets because of the real explosion in employment in these markets. The explosion in housing prices and in rental rates for housing in these markets, and shall we call it somewhat choppy performance of a lot of these new companies in actually turning a profit. Again, we don't think it's going to be 2000 or 2008, but we could see a slowdown coming in some of these markets.
It just seems that's just completely overvalued. I would agree with you. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Well, good stuff. Well, Arthur, thank you for your insights. We really appreciate it. It was very nice having you. Again, that website, rosenconsulting.com. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, thanks for letting me be in.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, artmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.